Blow the horn, go.
Everything that we do every day, we want to be a champ.
Get your mind right and let's go. Do the little things. Win every day.
It's the sole place they play football.
Everything with an attitude.
Alabama, you listen.
Keith fumbled and Alabama has recovered.
I told you what they were going to do.
Touchdown, Alabama.
It's 13 national championships.
Roll Tide!
I don't give a shit who we're playing.
Nothing they can play against. And make his ass quit! That's our framework! That's our MO with the G!
Daniel Moore, get your canvas ready!
Hello and welcome to the Alabama Football Podcast, the only Alabama podcast giving you a chance to win BCS championship tickets. Go to alabamafootballpodcast.com for details. Tom, I'm going to forgo the typically clever introduction and jump straight to our first topic. You know, when I reflect back on this game, I'm left to feeling a little bipolar. I look at some of the stats. Mark ran for 67 yards. Trent ran for 47. Greg had about 80 passing, and Julio had 19. It makes me wonder how bad we lost the game. I look at the score, 31-6, and it looks like we made a statement game for all comers to watch out. In this continuum, where do you fall?
You know, I think I fall on the side that we were lucky to win with this kind of a margin. And as we talk about this further today, this game could have easily been a 4-7 point contest. You know, you had a tale of two halves here. You know, last year Coach Saban talked about you have not seen this Alabama team put a complete game together for 60 minutes. And we still have not this year. We have seen a complete game by the second half of Arkansas and the first half of Florida. If you take the way that they came out at Arkansas, no intensity, no composure, they come out, they get hit in the mouth, they come back in the second half and they respond. They come out against Florida, who obviously they're amped up to play. Out of the gates, we're fast. We score on our first four possessions. And then what happens? The intensity goes away. I mean, one key stat for me is we had more yards on the first drive than we had the whole second half.
So, Tom, you see this as a glass is half empty situation.
I do.
All right. I'm going to go the other way, and I'm going to call this a glass is half full. I think that, I'm going to be honest with you, I think we kick their ass. It's easy to look at some of the stats, but it's also another thing to look at the outcome on the field. This is an outcome-based process, not a process-based process. And when I look at what happened, I think we put a beat down on the top seven team in the country, winning by 25 points. We forced them into multiple turnovers. We had several momentum-shifting plays, including the little pick of the Tebow 2.0 jump pass. We knocked their quarterback out of the game, planted the flag in their psyche, and I think that if they have the opportunity to come back to Atlanta, I think we'll be there waiting for them. I think we'll be in their heads.
See, I don't think you can look at it this way. I think Florida has a lot of things that they can build on. They really did everything they wanted to do to us in the second half. They took the barrage and were down 24-0. But if you look at the whole game and look at the stats, to your point, Florida put together those of over 10 plays. They put together three drives where they marched 80 yards down the field. They had a turnover at our 2, they had a turnover at our 5, and they throw a pick at their own 30 that we returned for a touchdown.
But Tom, they had the girl back to their apartment, they had the Luther Vandross on, they had the candles lit, and they still could not seal the deal. That's emasculating, man. I think that we're in their heads.
We might be. And Saban said it best in his post-conference, you know, in his post-game press conference. He talked about the Alabama-Florida series has become red zone defense. And 2 years ago, when we lost to them in the SEC championship game, every time they got into the red zone, they had a third and goal, they scored a touchdown. Last night, they had four chances on the red zone, they scored no points. That is great. That is a great momentum builder. But you know that I'm critical on us being able to get our defense off the field, and we cannot give up three 10-play drives and let a team march 80 yards down the field on three separate occasions.
You know, I guess the bottom line is this is a coach's dream. Saban can certainly come in and raise hell and thunder in coaching the team up, but he can go home and sleep well at night, too, after a win like that.
You know, let me go to our next point. I want to kind of talk about the push up front. We've talked on numerous podcasts about We thought at the beginning of the year that the front seven was going to be the strength of this defense. And I think you and I saw last night when we were watching this game that maybe we've underestimated the back of this defense. And maybe this has really flipped, because right now I think it hasn't been the up front, it hasn't been the front seven that has carried us. We talked about last week that we've got to get push up front. Where's going to be the Terrence Cody-like player in the middle? Well, interestingly enough, last night, it was Marcell Dareus and Damian Square.
That's right.
I mean, it's like the coaches are trying every combination they can try to say, on obvious passing downs, we've tried eight guys at the nose now. And so last night, Marcell Dareus was the most effective player we've had there yet.
Would it be fair to say that he looked more effective in his situations playing nose than he even did at defensive end?
I think he seems more comfortable on passing downs over the nose because he seemed more disruptive. He was even beating double teams.
Yes.
And so to your point, maybe on first and second down, he's comfortable on the edge, but I do think he seemed more comfortable over the center last night.
Yeah, I think that's interesting. Just another point, and we spent some time talking about this, is the pressure up front. And we continue to seem only to be able to manufacture pressure. And I guess when I say pressure, I'm limiting myself to sacks. But it's interesting that the defensive, that the DBs lead the team in sacks.
No, it is. And, you know, Saban always likes to talk about affecting the quarterback. And so, to your point, we've got five sacks on the year. Five sacks in five games. That's really nothing to write home about. But last night, to give the defense credit and to give the front seven a little credit, because I've been on them pretty hard this year, last night was the first time that we have really affected the quarterback. And to your point last night, we even knocked the quarterback out of the game.
Yeah, we knocked him out of the game, and two of the picks were clearly the result of the pressure. So, Saban kind of gets bristled when you talk about pressure equaling sacks. Pressure equals affecting the quarterbacks, and knocking him out of the game and forcing two picks. I guess I'd rather have picks than sacks, right?
Absolutely.
All right. I'm going to move to the defensive rotation. And, I'm going to start talking a little bit about this secondary, and this is almost just a status check because we've spent some time talking about this this season so far. But we spent most of the game in the nickel. We played a little straight up four DBs, but most of the game in nickel. I would consider that at this point. We're five games in. I would consider the nickel our base.
Kind of like what we did last year.
Exactly. And we played a lot of dime, too. I'm not yet ready to call the secondary the strength of our defense, but I'm close. And at the beginning of the season, we knew that there would be progress and some development, but I don't think we even then thought that this would be the strength of our defense.
No, and we only saw Will Lowry two or three times last night. And so we were only in the dime two or three times. I think he is getting more comfortable, or Kirby Smart's getting more comfortable with D. Milner, getting more comfortable with Daquan Menzie. We even saw last night that Dre Kirkpatrick came in on one play and blew up a play in the backfield a la Javi Arenas. And, you know, he was very physical last night. I think these guys are growing up quick.
Yeah, I agree. I think we have found our rotation. Dre, Menzie, and Milliner are the three cornerbacks with Barron and Lester at safety. That's our five in the nickel. Lowry's our dime. B.J. Scott, John Fulton, and Phelan, unless it's special teams, I don't think we're seeing them.
No, and what did you think about the rotation last night? We noticed the play of, you know, primarily the four players that were being, you know, rotated in and out. What did you think about that last night?
Yeah, I was going to comment on that. We saw, it was pretty unique. We saw Mosley and Menzie, and that's a linebacker and a DB, rotate every play with Nico and Chavis Williams, a linebacker and effectively a defensive end or a jack linebacker. Every play they would rotate, and, you know, short of pulling out a pen and paper and trying to do calculus there in the stands, I could not figure out the pattern other than just every other play. We'd run them in on first down, and I thought, well, it's a down and distance thing. Then we bring in the other pair on second down, bring the first down pair back on third down. Florida would get the first down. We'd bring the second down pair in for first down. It was a mixed match. It was literally every other play, without regard of any other circumstance, at least as far as I could tell.
And we talked about last night, they wouldn't even do the substitutions until after Florida had made their changes. And so they would bring the guys in, and the clock, there was 10 seconds left on the 25-second clock, and you commented last night, you know, why aren't they doing a no-hurry, a no-huddle offense to try to keep us from doing that so much?
Yeah, and it made me wonder if that pattern, that substitution was affecting the game and affecting Florida's ability to run plays, then why don't they go to the no-huddle and prevent us from doing that? I don't know. Maybe Urban couldn't figure it out either.
Well, it also might be that with this new quarterback, I mean, five games in, maybe they just were not comfortable with him running that type of offense like Tim Tebow was able to do.
Or do you think maybe we were just messing with a rookie?
That could have been part of it.
That could be part of it, too.
You know, another thing I wanted to talk about that's kind of off the radar a little bit was just some interesting special teams plays. You know, we're always looking at things that maybe you might not have noticed during the game, and just a couple things that were kind of interesting. First of all was, you know, Trent Richardson on kickoff coverage. Trent Richardson, I don't know if people know this, but he typically has one or two tackles every game, and he makes the play on the kickoff coverage. And so last night, out of the gate, what does Florida do? They focus on him with a double team and basically double team him all the way down the field, three kickoffs in a row, so that he is not able to make the play.
Right. On the coverage team, he's the third man in on the right side, and normally you think of almost like punting in a kickoff situation. You flank your fast guys on the edges, and maybe you go after the gunners. But they were purposely setting up to pick off number three, to pick off Richardson. I thought that was interesting. They did that multiple times.
Great film study. No, it was great film study. They knew who's the guy we got to worry about. And so then you had talked about during the game, you know, what are they going to do? What's Alabama going to do to adjust here? And to either Alabama's coaching staff credit or just Trent's tenacious, you're not going to beat me, he accounted for two tackles or at least one solo and one assist on kickoff later in the game.
Yeah, I thought after the third time seeing that, we might see us move Trent, and we didn't. And so if that was good film study on their part, I upped their film study with great athletic effort, because Trent, to your point, was still able to get tackles even after being double teamed on the kickoff.
Right. And another thing I want to talk about that was a little way off the radar here is true freshman John Fulton, highly regarded cornerback, who, as you were speaking to earlier, is not in the rotation right now, but he is playing on special teams because of his talent. And there was a key point in that second quarter where the momentum was clearly building in our favor, that he was helping Will Lowry at midfield. He sees the long snapper streaking down the middle of the field, and he's going to be able to have a shot on Julio. He quickly has the angle and hauls tail 30 yards down the field and doesn't block him from the back like most young players would do, is able to get in front of him barely, allows Julio to return the ball 40 yards to set up a short field at their 45-yard line. We score another touchdown, and now it's 24-0.
Yeah, John's going to be a good player in the secondary. He is a true freshman, so it's not that much of a surprise that he's not getting the reps back there. But he showed definitely some hustle and some technique there to get his head around. He's going to be a good one for us.
He is, and that's just a huge effort play. I guess what I meant is three-year to our special team stars does not make that kind of a heads-up play.
Sure. You know, speaking of special teams, just one thing that I just want to get out there and just ask you a question. You know, Florida's kicker was not available for this game. He was a late scratch. Didn't even make the trip up. So they had their punter handling some of the kickoffs, and they had a freshman kicker handling, you know, some of the kicking duties as well. I wonder, do you think not having their traditional field goal kicker in, did that impact or influence any of the Florida decisions to go for it on fourth down?
You know, late in the game when they were behind, they're going to go for it. But earlier in the game, there was one series in the second quarter where they didn't go for a 35-yard field goal and actually converted the first down for their only fourth down conversion on the night. But they attempted three fourth down conversions last night, and some of that has to be attributed to, you know, we don't know what we're going to get from this young kicker on the road.
Tommy, who do you award your mini game ball to this week?
It has to be Courtney Upshaw. Even though he's on the headlines, he was interviewed by Eli and the staff, and Eli and Phil after the game. we got to give some kudos to Courtney Upshaw. He's been hurt and banged up earlier this year, but, you know, we've talked about where's the pressure, where's the tackles for loss. Courtney Upshaw finished the game with 7 tackles, 4 for losses, 2 pass breakups, and a fumble recovery. He filled up the stat sheet by himself. And he's still banged up. He's not 100%. Saban says he is, but he's probably 75%.
All right, we're going to start calling you Cecil Hurt as long as you keep with these headlines. But Courtney definitely had his best game in Crimson, and we're certainly proud of that. I'm going to give my mini game ball. I think he still qualifies for a mini game ball, and I better get it out now before he becomes a hero, and that's C.J. Mosley. He's a true freshman that we can't keep him off the field. We have so many talented, highly recruited linebackers, and CJ comes in as a freshman and is really beating them all out for playing time. And you know, he was part of that rotation packet that I was talking about earlier, almost like we're fabricating opportunities to get him on the field. He had his first pick. I know I say this about Robert Lester. He's breaking out, going to be a star. CJ Mosley's going to be a star. I think we have a lot of talent that is just beginning to emerge. Walking away from yesterday's game, what's your big takeaway?
You know, this is not a big takeaway, and this is probably nitpicky, and we won 31-6. That's awesome. But one thing that I said at the beginning of the year is I did think we were going to be in the national championship game again this year, barring any injuries to certain key positions. And one of those positions, probably the top position on that list, is Greg McElroy.
Yep.
But Greg McElroy, what he brings to this offense, and stability-wise, and great decision-making, and not making turnovers and protecting the ball, he cannot take as many hits going forward as he did last night. He rushed for 40 yards. I think he carried the ball 7, you know, he scrambled 7 times, and there was a couple times that he should have gone out of bounds that it's like, come on and bring it, and he just got drilled. And he can't do that.
Yeah, I think on his longest run, he was channeling his high-stepping, hopping down the sideline in the Georgia Dome, because he clearly had the opportunity to step out of bounds, and he just wanted to hit that deep defensive back, I think.
That's great, but, you know, we've seen in our Alabama past, you know, a la Brody Croll, that things happen. And you take a hit the wrong way, and now he's gone for the year, and that changes the season dramatically.
Hey, Greg, we love the passion. Don't do it again, right?
Right.
All right. Hey, my takeaway, I just want to talk a little bit about multiples on offense and just a couple observations that I had, nothing really big, but we talked in the preseason about seeing Trent and Mark on the field together. We saw that. Only just a couple of plays, but this is the first time in the last 2 years that we did that. And so what's interesting to me is we get all hyped up to see Trent and Mark on the field. What are we going to do? And we throw to Julio. And it just makes you realize, gosh, there are a lot of offensive weapons on this team, and you have to really account for all of them. You know, we had 3 players step into and play the Wildcat formation, both the running backs and then Mays. Certainly, I think everyone remembers his play there, and the fact that that was his, you know, he played a little quarterback in high school, and that was his one of his handful of plays at the Wildcat. He goes in, throws a touchdown, and it happens to be to a tight end, Micah Williams, and that's his first touchdown pass. It's just, it seems like almost every game somebody's getting their first touchdown pass. If you're a defensive coordinator and you're trying to break down, what are they going to do? We don't even know yet what we're going to do, because we're still developing and still evolving. I think we put a lot of stuff on film that, you know, teams still have to consider to spend some time thinking for and planning for. Tom, so as we look forward, we turn the page on the Florida game and we look forward to South Carolina. What are your thoughts?
I think it's going to be a tough game. You know, this is our third game in our gauntlet of the offensive gurus, you know, that we spoke about on a couple podcasts. South Carolina is a tough place to play. I think they have a lot of weapons. I think Coach Spurrier has his first true tailback in many years that can give him a balanced attack. You know, we've seen year to date that we're rushing for 6 yards a carry on average, and teams are rushing for 3. And that's what we've got to do again on Saturday. We have got to take Lattimore out of the game and really kind of follow some of Auburn's playbook and put the game in Steven Garcia's hands. Because if you put the game in the quarterback's hands, who knows? His head can still be messed up from, you know, what was pulled against Auburn as far as pulling him out of the game and, you know, bringing in the freshman quarterback.
Yeah, I agree. I think when we face South Carolina, it'll be one of our more balanced teams. If they can figure out the quarterback situation, you know, they have a receiver in Jeffries and a running back in Lattimore that could play for any team in the SEC. They have a lot of talent at those skill positions. You mentioned Columbia being a tough place to play. Those Cox, they certainly get up early and drink hard and fight as well. And so I look at it as a tough game. I think for us, it's a 3:30 kickoff on the CBS. I think it's going to be a business trip. And I see it being a very business-like 24-13 style ball game. I think we take them by double digits, but it's a low scoring affair on our part, but we do get out with a win.
Well, I also think that we're going to win by, you know, double digits, 10-14 points, and probably 27-10, 24-10, something like that.
All right. Hey, this has been another edition of the Alabama Football Podcast. Thanks for tuning in, and roll tide. Thanks for tuning in to the Alabama Football Podcast. For more, find us on Facebook under Alabama Football Podcast.
All right.
Visit us on the web at alabamafootballpodcast.com.
All right.
Email us at alabamafootballpodcast@gmail.com.
All right.
And don't forget to subscribe to us on iTunes.
All right.
Blow the horn, let's go. And everything that we do every day, we want to be a champ.
Get your mind right and let's go. Do the little things. Win every day.
It's the sole place they play football.
Everything with an attitude.
Alabama.
He fumbled and Alabama has recovered.
I told you what they were going to do.
Touchdown, Alabama.
It's 13 national championships.
Roll Tide.
I don't give a shit who we're playing.
Now they can play against and make his ass quit. That's our trademark. That's our MO with the team.
Daniel Moore, get your canvas ready.
I know you like to be prepared. What do you think about just going with it?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, I can't do it any worse.